Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, all of the shows are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com, and they're also archived at the radio station, if you'd prefer, at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about humor. Because it's rather important in order to diffuse a situation to be able to, well, to react in a gracious manner, if not necessarily a funny one, but to be able to see that it's not the end of the world and that we can always move forward. Yes. So, as we often do on these shows, let's define what we're talking about first. So what is humor within our context, within the context of an alternative dispute resolution, a mediation, a seminar, a workshop, a teaching situation, whatever it is that we're doing, but what is humor within our context? Yeah. And, you know, we announce these topics a little ahead of time, and everyone knows, well, thank you for all of your participation, for one thing. I see there's lots of people. And the people that have been here before and the new people will know it soon, we usually define what we mean. And I have thought of humor in this first context that we're going to talk about because I see a lot of people are using it in that context too. But also we have quite a few people who have taken humor within our context to really mean to humor someone. So we're going to talk about it both ways because it's very, very important in both directions. Yeah, so let's talk about it first. What is humor within the context of what we're doing? Let's see, we have lots of participation. Thank you all for being here. Abasi says, and this Abasi and other people, say that humor within our context is a good-natured attitude. Isn't that true? A good-natured attitude. We're going to have an attitude that's positive, and we're going to think the best of people and that they have good intentions. And therefore, whatever happens, we can look at it with a good-natured attitude, with humor. Anita says that it is tolerance of others. To have a good attitude would be tolerance of others. Sometimes people, well, you know, sometimes participants say something that is meant to get a reaction. And it's not always a very pleasant something. And you can't respond in kind because then you've started a fight, right? No. We're going to answer in a good-natured attitude with good humor. Yeah. And that's really the key to it, to be able to answer, to turn it around so that even though it might have been meant as a, well, less than gracious comment by someone in the group. Yeah, I'm getting some examples of some doozies. Yeah, well, sometimes people like to get a rise out of someone. Or they want to, yes, that's true. A lot of people are saying there's some, we've talked about this in prior shows too. We've talked about people who are bullies, right? And rudeness and lack of civility. And prior shows are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com, also at the radio station, blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. now. And we've talked about this before. Sometimes people in the room, for their own purposes or for the purpose of kind of derailing the group, try to hijack the group, try to derail it by being combative, or saying something completely outrageous that really causes someone else in the group to respond in kind. Yeah, well, that's no good, because we need to get to a common goal. We need to have a successful conclusion. You can't just have people going off on tangents. So what do? You need to use your own good humor to get everyone back on track. And that really is tolerance of others, isn't it, as Anita says? Tolerance of others. Tolerance of other people's... Yeah, people say tolerance of other people's bad humor. Well, that's a real good point, yeah. And that happens, too, because, you know, humor works both ways. And Jason says that humor within our context is the ability not to take offense. The ability not to take offense. Not to, if someone says something to you, not to get all bristly about it and take offense. And also answer in, well, less than good humor manner. Yeah. So we're the leader. We're the good example, right? And Pascal says you also need a sense of humor when faced with the ludicrous. You need a sense of humor when faced with the ludicrous. Yeah. And people are also giving examples where you need a sense of humor where you're faced with someone who has a preconceived notion that will not advance us forward. How's that for being politically correct and saying that nicely? Yes. Sometimes you have someone who's an actual bigot or something in the group. And exactly, you need to have a sense of humor when faced with the ludicrous and the ability not to take offense. Because we're the leader, usually. And we need to be able to go forward and not let someone of a unpleasant nature get us off track. Or make a less convivial atmosphere so that people don't come back, right? See, that's why we make the convivial atmosphere. That's why we react with good humor, with tolerance, with a good-natured attitude, because we want people to it's a process. They have to come back again, right? And we want everyone to feel comfortable. Yeah. Now, I'm going to put these under two humor. See, when I asked, when I made the topic, when I thought about it, and you know these shows are completely unscripted, they're organic. They go wherever we go, wherever the participation takes us. Yes, and thank you so much, all of you, for being here. And it's, I thought of it in that sense, in the leader having the force of personality, not to take offense and to have a good attitude, good-natured attitude, and be tolerant and to work it around so that we don't get hijacked by someone who is trying to prevent us from reaching a successful conclusion. I thought of it in that manner. I did. And but I see that a lot of you looked at it, and this is a really good point because we've all had these experiences, and I just called it humor, H-U-M-O-R was the title of the topic for this time, and a lot of you took it as to humor someone in the group. So let's talk about what that means. What does it mean to humor someone within our context? Yeah, and not just our attitude, but as Kelly says, to humor within our context, within the context of a workshop, a seminar, a class, an alternative dispute resolution, a mediation, whatever we're doing, Joyce says, and others are saying too, to humor someone would be to give deference to another person, to give deference to them, to give them respect, right? And that's a very important point, because a lot of times we need to give deference to someone in the group, right? Yeah. Hasin says that it's not only to give deference to another person, it's to humor them, right? Is that an Americanism? It doesn't seem to be. We all understand what it means to humor somebody, to give them deference, to listen to them extra, to be particularly gracious. Mm-hmm. Hasin says to allow the other person's whims and moods. Yeah, even if they're feeling kind of out of sorts. Oh, good point. A lot of people are saying that it's not necessarily a bad mood, but sometimes people we need to humor and give deference to are feeling kind of talkative. they want to kind of make a whole big speech on something. Well, we might need to humor them, and pardon me, goes to show this is a live show. Thank you. People are saying bless you. Isn't that nice? Thank you. kind of sneezed on you guys. Sorry about that. Just took a little sip there. There we go. And to give deference to humor somebody, to humor their mood. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nathan says to humor someone might be to comply with their wishes. Mm-hmm. To comply with their wishes. You know, sometimes that's true. Sometimes you need to humor someone and they have kind of a preference, which would be a wish, right? Yeah, a lot of you, this is a very good point. A lot of you are making the point that to humor someone doesn't need to take a lot of time or take away from someone else. Sometimes people have a preference or a mood or something. They might like, for example, a certain chair, mm-hmm. a certain seat in the room, and you might save that seat for them. You know, that's their seat because they come every time, and they like the one with the arms and the padded cushion, you see? And so that kind of, you could have a, someone could have a seat they especially like. That would be to humor them, to save it off. That's a little graciousness that doesn't hurt anybody else, right? Mm-hmm. And people understand it. Yes, good point. Sometimes there's an actual reason for it. They might, for example, well, be hard for them to get in and out of a straight back chair, for example, and they need a cushion or they need a arms or something, right? Yeah. And that's humoring somebody. It's giving them deference. Mm-hmm. It's kind of catering to their whims because it might not be a desperate thing that they need, but it doesn't hurt anybody. And it might, if it's someone who you want to humor. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of people are mentioning food, different types of food, like a snack that someone is particularly fond of. Well, everybody else probably likes it too. So, everybody, I mean, you can't just give that person, that only person, that snack. Everybody gets it. Everybody's entitled to eat it. But it might be something that you know that this person particularly likes to see. Mm-hmm. I got to tell you that I know some of my participants who come. I have kind of a wait list of clients, especially, and they come with different problems occasionally. You know what I mean? They're repeat customers, is what I'm telling you. And I know that there's this one person who really, really likes popcorn. Hmm? It's not my first choice to have popcorn personally, because I'm not all that fond of it, but they really, really like salted popcorn. And so when I know that they're going to be a participant, we all have salted popcorn, and I get extra. I make extra just in the room in bowls so that everybody can have it because I know that this person will be more liable to participate, more benevolent, more compliant if they've got a bowl of popcorn in their lap. It's not a very hard thing for me to do, but it humors them. Yeah, because I know about it. So that's complying with a wish. Whitney says you can even comply with unusual requests. Mm-hmm. Unusual requests. People are making a point about celebrities. You know, sometimes celebrities have something in their contract they need, I don't know, a certain kind of soda or something that's kind of hard to come by in other countries. I have a client who really likes Mountain Dew. It's an oddity. It's kind of a, it's not a regional cola, but it's not something you can get all over everywhere. It's kind of a thing that you have to search for. So unusual requests. I always think, and people are giving me all kinds of examples, and thank you for all of your participation. I always think that if you know somebody has a preference and it doesn't impede the process in any way, and it doesn't annoy the other participants, especially since they're going to get to participate in whatever the preference is also, especially if it's food, I don't see why not. I guess that I don't mind humoring people. I think it makes for a more convivial atmosphere, and it makes the process go more smoothly. Yeah. And usually it's some sort of a thing that either doesn't bother anyone else, or everyone would really like it, like popcorn. Everyone would really like bowls of popcorn in the room. You'd be surprised. People really do. They you know, some sort of a snack or some sort of a dish. Yes, yes. George always likes mashed potatoes every time. Yeah, whatever it is that you, if someone has a preference, well, why not if it's easy enough to do? And pretty much everybody would like it or it doesn't bother them. It's like the armchair. Well, most people don't particularly care. And if somebody really liked the armchair, or they need it, hey, seems like a good idea. So to complying with wishes, to humor someone, to allow, to pay deference, really, to give them a little extra consideration so that they feel welcome. Yeah. So they feel special. People are saying so the person feels special. Yes, why not? But I don't want other people in the group to feel unspecial. Does that make sense? Yeah. You don't want to pay so much deference that other people feel second class, second rate. So it's kind of a fine line. When I have someone who I know has a preference, or a request, I try to include everybody in the request. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. People are saying even on the chair thing, you might get more comfortable chairs for everybody. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So we've decided that we want to humor people as well as to use humor within the context of making for a smoother process. So let's start with this two humor idea. Who do we often humor? Mm-hmm. Who do we often need to humor so that we know it when we see it, right? Because we're a practical show, and we don't just talk in generalities. We want to know who it is that we might need to humor and show a little deference to. And how we should go about that. Because mm-hmm. It is a rather delicate act. It's a delicate balance between humoring someone within the group and affecting the group dynamic because other people feel left out. Mm-hmm. You'd be surprised. People are very sensitive when they get into a group. So who do we often need to humor? Mm-hmm. Matthew and others are saying religious leaders. There is a context where religious leaders are involved, and it does, especially if it doesn't happen to be your religion. Yes, you might want to humor them with some deference, especially if they are a religion that is quite different than yours, because you want to be certain that you're not being either condescending or insulting. Because after all, that's their faith. That's their belief. And this is something that is a fundamental. It's a core value in a lot of people. And I happen to be a Christian, but not everybody I deal with by far is a Christian. And I always do give deference to the religious leaders because, for a variety of reasons. Yes, thank you. For a very practical reason, too. Not only do I think it would be rude not to show them the same deference I would show and not to humor them in the sense that I would show to a leader of my own religion, but it's a practical side too, right? Because if you are dealing with religious leaders, then they are having an impact upon your participants, which has an impact upon your successful outcome. So there's a real pragmatic reason to show deference, to humor a religious leader who is involved in the discussion. So it's not only just politeness to act in a polite and civil manner, but hey, it's practical too, because if they're involved, they've got some influence. Helen says you also need to give deference to the elders in the community. Yes. They have more experience, for one thing. And depending on what community you're talking about, they might indeed be the leaders also. As someone who is given respect within the community and holds a position of influence. So you might want to humor them. You know, this is a good... I don't know if this... I'm never quite sure if this is a politically correct thing to do or not. But people are saying, and thank you for all of your participation, that you need to humor the older people in the community. This is kind of a generational thing. And not put everything necessarily just on the computer, or at least in a way that is easily accessible. Now, I run into this somewhat, and I have to tell you, I run into this with real business people, because I run into it professionally too. I do a lot of business mediation, alternative dispute resolution, and in the United States, at least, I do quite a bit of cross-cultural, I do a lot of cross-cultural work with different kinds of people, but they're all basically business people, and because I don't speak another language, which is probably bad, but I don't speak anything besides English, at least not fluently. I've dealt with interpreters sometimes, but for real mediation, people who need an interpreter are not usually my clients. I don't usually deal with outside of the English language, and I usually deal with people who are cross-culturally in the sense of age, but also in the sense of technology ability. In the United States, at least in pockets of it, there's a big generational gap between technology usage and printed page usage. And I'm very big on it. We've talked about this in prior shows. Prior shows are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. We've talked about this in prior shows. I think it's important, if you're going to have people come together, that you disseminate information that needs to be read before you actually talk to each other, so that you don't have people listening with, you know how you see the expression listening with one ear? means that you're not really giving full attention to what's going on because you're trying to scan some sort of a document for information. Now, I think that most people can handle an email attachment, but it might humor people and give deference to also send it snail mail, to send it a real printed copy of something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And people are saying that you need to do that with the elders in the community. I'm very careful that when I do that, to send it, okay, if I secretly think it's because someone or some group of people that are participating really aren't very technology savvy and they're going to have trouble opening it, they're going to have trouble reading it online. You know what I mean? If I secretly think that, and sometimes you do get that impression, I will send it both ways to everyone. Yeah. And sometimes people are very appreciative, and then you get the person who says, why are you wasting paper? I want to read it online. I don't want you to mail it to me. Well, okay, humor them. Give them deference. Don't send them the printout. You see, if somebody says that they want it one way or another, but I'm not adverse to sending to everyone. First of all, I think sometimes, you know how sometimes you kind of would appreciate that because you're someplace where you've only got a mobile device, like your phone, and it's really too small to read something. You know, some sort of an attachment with pages, it's too small to read it on your phone, really. Or you're not someplace where they've got a lot of Wi-Fi, you see. Or, you know, you want to download it. It might be more practical to have it in paper. I see that people do indeed. I send both ways. And I see that people do indeed show up at the physical meeting show up in the sense that they might be in the room or in Skype or something. But they've actually got the written materials with them. Mm-hmm. And even if we had emailed it, they would have printed it out. But they've actually got it with them and notated on the side with pen and like that. And we're talking all generations. So, yes, to humor, people are saying you humor the elders in the community by sending by paper different whatever needs to be done. I got to tell you, I think a lot of people really like it sent both ways because there's something to be said for paper. You can use it when you're really not able to see it on whatever kind of device you've got in your hand at that moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and you can write all over it. Yeah, I send it both ways. I think I send it to humor all the participants. But if somebody doesn't want you to, hey, that's humoring them the other way. Yeah. So we'd like, who do we need to humor to a certain extent? Well, the elders, but everybody, huh? Now, this is a good point that Thomas and others are making, that the person you need to humor is the individual who the other participants respect. Yeah, it's somebody who has the respect of the people in the room. You need to humor them. First of all, they've got some sway. Their opinion might count for extra with the other participants if they respect that person. Mm-hmm. And they respect that you might want to humor them. Yeah. So the individual who has the other participants' respect would be someone we need to humor. Mm-hmm. You know, Brenda and others are adding that it might be an organization and not an individual. Mm-hmm. You usually think of to humor as being one-on-one with someone, an individual, but it might be an organization in the sense that the people of the organization, the leaders, the board, whatever it is, might want something, a printed copy for everyone, you know, might want a video conferencing call, for example. They might want to participate. They might want to participate only at a certain point. You know what I mean? That's humoring people, right? Yeah. We've got lots of examples, and thank you for all of your participation, of kind of requests that we've seen that have been made. And if possible, I try to grant them. Yeah, why not? Because, or at least make an effort to do so. And if it can't be done, whatever it is, the request, I don't ignore it. Tell why in a very polite way. Mm-hmm. Because that is humoring someone also. Will you humor their feelings? Will you respect them? And you say, well, we can't, I don't know, whatever it is, because, okay, we can, say, for example, we can't have peanut butter sandwiches, which somebody would really like, because someone's deathly allergic to peanuts in the room. And they, you really can't, if they smell the peanut smell, they're going to be ill. You kind of can't, but you got to explain that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, this is like the ultimate answer. Dean and others say that the person that you, who do we often need to humor is the question. And Dean says the answer is everyone when listening to opinions and ideas. Yeah, you have to humor everybody because you have to listen without bias and without rolling your eyes and like that, to everyone's opinions and ideas. So everybody gets to be humored when they are giving their opinions. Yeah, when they're giving their opinions and ideas, because we really want them to, and we want them to be full participants. Right. Mm-hmm. Jocelyn says you have to humor the experts who you've called in to assist the situation. You need to humor the experts called in to assist the situation. Yeah. You've asked them to come. Mm-hmm. Now, there is a certain difference, humoring-wise, between experts who have been nice enough to volunteer their expertise and you're taking their time and their effort, because after all, that's what they sell, is their time and effort to a great extent. And they are giving it to you as a gift. This means that you must be particularly gracious and have some gratitude for their effort. That's one kind of expert, but there's another kind that you pay. Mm-hmm. And when you pay them, you can still be gracious and polite and humor them, especially if they have a real specific expertise that you need. But you can be a little more, it's more of a business transaction, right? Yeah. And, good point. People are saying if they are a paid consultant, someone who you have hired as an expert, that to a certain extent they need to humor you. Yeah. Humoring goes both ways, right? Yeah. A consultant, a paid expert might need to humor the needs of the group, to humor someone's request to really explain something more carefully, mm-hmm. or to, well, people, let's see, there's examples where people have asked someone to connect with someone else, to consult with someone else. And like that, yeah, if they are a paid expert, then to a certain extent they need to humor you because you are the money. You are the employer, so to speak. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Irving and others say that you need to humor guests who have influence over the outcome. Yeah. That might be the expert that we just talked about. It might be a guest from an organization. Mm-hmm. One of the religious leaders, whatever. The guests, you need to humor guests who have influence over the outcome. Mm-hmm. They are the invisible participant who has now come to talk to you, to listen in. Uh-huh. And you need to show them deference because they have influence. Because we need to get to a successful conclusion, and we need to be able to deal with anyone who has influence over that statement, successful conclusion. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, Ralphie and others are making a good point that not only guests who have influence over the outcome need to be humored, but participants too. Sometimes, you know, we say that all participants are equal, right? Participants who have influence over the income need to be humored. All participants are equal. Everybody gets a chance to speak. They get an equal chance to speak. And their opinions are considered, right? Right. Sometimes, frequently, there's a participant who has somewhat greater influence over the outcome than the others. Might be a boss. Might be a media person. For some reason, they have more influence. I don't like to say more say, more power, but they need to be humored a little bit because they can really influence the outcome. Mm-hmm. More so maybe than some of the other people in the group, especially if you've got someone who has real followers. Mm-hmm. And they're not exactly the leader because that's us, but they've got followers in the group, right? Yeah. So that really does make a difference influence-wise, participants. They need to be humored maybe a little more. Mm-hmm. Diane and others are using the words opinion influencers, and I like it, yeah, because they need to be humored. And those are, for lack of a better word, it's kind of a big word, but they're media. Mm-hmm. Opinion influencers, they're really media. It's not only traditional media, which still exists and people still look at it, but social media, all those lovely bloggers out there. And also people are talking about public opinion, like a celebrity influence, maybe a celebrity endorsement. And if, of course, if you had such a thing, you'd need to humor them. But that would be an opinion influencer that you would need to show some deference to, right? Yeah. Public opinion celebrity influencers people are talking about. Well, yeah. And hopefully they influence for the positive. Yay. So now we've discussed what it is. And we've discussed who it is. How can we use humor effectively to influence the outcome? Because that's the ultimate question, right? How do we use, God, our ability to humor and our ability to have humor, to effectively influence the outcome? Mm-hmm. What should we do? Because we're a practical place. So how can we use humor to effectively influence the outcome? Frederick and others are saying that you use humor to diffuse a tense situation. Sometimes tempers might be starting to, we might be getting a little bit towards the uncivil, right? And we need to diffuse a tense situation. Mm-hmm. Now, we're not really going to, I don't think, tell an actual joke or something. I mean, I suppose you could. But it's in the context of the seminar, the workshop, etc. We need humor to diffuse a tense situation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. May says you need humor to separate the combatants and prevent escalation. Separate the combatants and prevent escalation. Well, first of all, I'm hoping that we don't have combatants. We try to prevent the escalation before we get to that part, right? Yeah. May goes, yeah, I think so. Yes, you need to prevent it from getting out of hand, right? That's what we want to do. We want to prevent people from fighting with each other, from becoming uncivil, from getting off path. Yeah, because we're headed towards a successful outcome. And we want to keep it that way, right? Yeah. We want to be able to prevent escalation and diffuse a tense situation before it gets any worse. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, we're going to talk, well, we may get kind of close in time. We're going to talk about the use of food as a tool to call a timeout, right? That's in addition to our good humor. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we need to say, well, we can use a moment to change the subject. We're going to have a timeout. We're going to have something to eat. We're going to be convivial. The leader might even have a private little word with us. That would be us, right? And we're going to get back on track. Yeah. So we use good humor to diffuse the situation and prevent escalation. Mm-hmm. You know, Wyatt and others are also giving examples where you use humor to illustrate an idea, like to make an analogy or to tell a little story about something that you experienced. I kind of do that. You know, as we gain more experience, we've rather seen these situations before, right? But our participants, this may be the first time. They don't have your experience. That's why you're the leader. And sometimes you can tell not a funny, well, sometimes they're a funny story, but kind of a life story about a prior situation that worked out in this particular direction, right? And that's using humor to tell it in a way that's interesting. It doesn't have to be laugh-out-loud funny. I mean, how many stories really are? But it's kind of, even sometimes you tell a little appropriate joke, which is, well, yeah, I'm getting quite a few people saying don't do that. You got to think about it ahead of time if you're going to tell a story or a little anecdote type thing, to make sure that it's not insulting to anybody in the room. Yeah, because you got to kind of double-check that. Because humor's a funny thing in the funny category, because not everybody thinks the same things are funny. But a little life story, a little anecdote is usually fine. Mm-hmm. Or like a quotation from someone, yeah. Mm-hmm. So use humor, why it says use humor to illustrate an idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to illustrate an experience and an idea of where to go from here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here, Romy says that we can use humor effectively to influence the outcome and to prevent hard feelings and create the ability to move forward. To prevent hard feelings. Hard feelings is kind of an Americanism, I suppose. It means to prevent people from feeling insulted. Or slighted. Yeah. To prevent hard feelings and create the ability to move forward. If people feel kind of insulted, kind of slighted, it's harder to move forward, right? It's a real good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Camille says that you use humor to emphasize the common goal and prevent misunderstanding. Emphasize the common goal and prevent misunderstandings. Yes. You know, sometimes that's what happens. A misunderstanding has occurred, right? Someone's feeling a little touchy, you know, feeling kind of sensitive. Or someone didn't realize that they'd done something that was less than swell. Because in their culture, it's fine. Yeah. We have that sometimes. I see it quite a bit on keeping an appointment, on timing, right? different cultures view the time of a meeting differently. Mm-hmm. I don't see that so much in business. Excuse me. But I see it sometimes. Yeah, people are going to see it in business too. Maybe. But mainly in organizations or individuals who come from really quite different backgrounds. And you have to use a little bit of good nature and good humor to tell everyone that the time that we're meeting, for example, is serious. Yeah. And if you know that people in the group kind of don't necessarily keep time so well, you can tell them the time that we're starting, but have a little reception, so to speak. Have a little bite to eat and like that. And then they'll come. I don't usually hold an entire meeting for someone, though, because I've asked them to come on time. Mm-hmm. I've kind of, and I've reminded them, and, you know, like that, yeah. Mm-hmm. You got to do it with good humor. But sometimes people need a little extra reminder. Mm-hmm. Jin says that you might need to referee the situation without animosity. Mm-hmm. Referee the situation without animosity. And that really is, gets down to it, doesn't it? Because we are kind of, as the leader, the referee, aren't we? We keep everything going forward, and we keep the participants on track, right? Mm-hmm. So you need humor to referee the situation without animosity. Animosity will do you no good. There's no sense in yelling. I've seen this. It just makes my teeth ache. There's no sense in raising your voice or getting nasty to someone in the group, in front of everyone. I don't see it. Yeah, people are saying, well, there's some situations. And thank you for all of your participation. Yeah, I'm getting some disagreement with that statement, that sometimes you need to really put your foot down and throw someone out. I guess I tend to do it more politely, more graciously, and more privately. Mm-hmm. So you might need to referee the situation without animosity. I think that it causes animosity when you kind of answer in kind and throw somebody out type thing. Mm-hmm. Because there's always a next time, at least in my experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Patrick says that you use humor to make the participants think about the consequences of taking offense. Good point. You use humor to make the participants think about the consequences of taking offense. Yeah, it might feel good now for the minute, but in the long run, what have we gained by puffing up and taking offense at something? Yeah, no, let's diffuse the situation. Yeah. Mashiko says that it is the leader's job to model a gracious sense of humor as the leader. We need to model a gracious sense of humor as the leader. Yeah, we need to be a good example. Yeah. If we lose our good nature, mm-hmm, if we lose our sense of humor, we are the good example to everyone. We're not a good example anymore. And nothing will cause the group dynamic, will cause the whole thing to implode, will cause it to really collapse. Nothing will make that, do that faster than really losing your sense of humor completely and just being a bad example of control. Yeah. So you model a gracious sense of humor as the leader. Yeah, need to be a good example. Mm-hmm. This is an interesting way of putting it. Pardon me. Braden says we can effectively use humor in any situation by understanding and taking into account personality differences and refusing to be baited. Baited, like a fish on a hook, yeah, baited. By understanding and taking into account personality differences and refusing to be baited. Baited is kind of an Americanism. It means that somebody has done something or said something really, really annoying or rude or something like that. They've really, well, I suppose this is another Americanism, but they've really kind of pushed the buttons, pushed your buttons. They've really annoyed you. They've really gotten your attention. And if you respond in kind, they win, right? Because you've taken the bait, so to speak. You have, they wanted you to get riled, and you did it. Yay, team, how much fun is that? Well, not very, but you know what I mean. They wanted to see the reaction, and it was lots of fun to get it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. By understanding and taking into account personality differences and refusing to be baited. Good point, Braden, and others. We're getting a lot of agreement about that. And as the leader, we need a good example of self-control, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And not take the bait and not just fly off the handle somehow. Mm-hmm. Get angry. Mm-hmm. Su Luwen says that you use humor and control the situation and go forward by civilly enforcing the civility rules. By civilly enforcing the civility rules, which means that you never lose your temper in front of everyone, right? You never are a bad example of self-control. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's civility rules. By civilly enforcing the civility rules. Now, we talk about the civility rules, I guess, quite a bit on this show. And really, they are rules. No spitting, no taking out of turn, no being rude, those kind of rules. Yeah. And they seem like common sense, but they're not really. And one of the best ways to keep our own sense of humor, really, and sometimes we need a break too, is to call a time out that is really a way to diffuse the situation. And usually when we call a timeout, we kind of advocate having some food because it gives us something to do that we're not going to be pissed off about, right? And it gives us a way to be able to network with each other. I know it's an overused word, but it's still true. And be able to say, look, let's take a little breather. Mm-hmm. Let's have some of the delicious food that we've got here. I'm just dying to have some, right? The food is a tool. Not really food because we're hungry, although it might be dinner time. I mean, we might be hungry. But the food is really a tool to get us away from the formality of the discussion and to give us something to do with each other that is fun, that is good, that we will not be mad about, right? Yeah. So the food is a tool. Now, I can see it like oftentimes we are kind of running out of time. And that's wonderful because it means that we've had a lovely discussion. And thank you so much, all of you, for being here. So let's do just one of the recipes. And before we talk about food, I am indeed going to say the same thing that I say every time, and you guys know what it is, most of you. Yes, hello, thank you for being here. If you're going to have food, you need to take a survey amongst the participants and disseminate the information concerning any food allergies, food restrictions, or religious prohibitions for some sort of food. Yeah, you don't want anyone to have a bad time. you will also ask people to label the food, not what's it called, meatloaf, but what is in it so that I can make a judgment whether or not I can eat it. Right, right. Mm-hmm. And also, I do think that because I just hate a party where they run out of food, because it's so unsocial, so unconvivial, that we should have a little extra. As the host, we should bring extra. And we should have at least one safe recipe. Now, what's a safe recipe? Safe recipe does not have too many ingredients. They are ingredients that would be known to my people, to your people, because they were fairly common. They would have eaten them before and know if they can. Mm-hmm. And the ingredients don't violate anybody's rules from the survey. Dietary restrictions, religious restrictions, and allergies, yeah. Now, that's the safe recipe. We also often have an adventure recipe, which is a little bit, might be tastes that people haven't had, or an ingredient that might be a little questionable about whether you can have it, yeah. And that would be an adventure recipe. And you know what? I'm going to try to quickly do the adventure recipe. We've got about 3 minutes. What do you guys think? Can I do it? Just because I'm tired of writing chickpea chili down. We keep not getting to it. It's kind of like, yay, we haven't gotten to it. Yeah, we'll give it a try. Okay. So let's do the chickpea chili one. And first of all, if you guys want to use raw chickpeas, you know, the hard kind, they really like garbanzo beans, do it. Yours will be better than mine. I'm going to use cans. But, of course, you need to soak them if you're using something that's hard. Mm-hmm. So let's get ourselves a tablespoon of oil. This is the chickpea chili recipe. Let's get a tablespoon of oil, 2 onions that we're going to slice up nice and thin. Let's have 4 garlic cloves. I like garlic. You guys think I put in too much garlic, get less. 4 garlic cloves crushed. Let's have 1 teaspoon of chili powder. I don't like to make it too strong. You can have stuff on the side to make it stronger. Condiments are a nice thing, right? 1 tablespoon of ground cumin. Let's have 1 tablespoon of ground coriander, too. That's often nice. A little bit of sea salt. And let's have 2 big cans of chickpeas that we're going to, of course, rinse and drain. You know that beans have slime in the can. It's not like tomatoes. Never use that. I'll drain them and rinse them underwater and get rid of the, you know how some the chickpeas have like shells and some of them are loose? Well, get rid of those. It's not that they're not edible, but they're just ugly. So get rid of them. And let's have a nice big can of diced tomatoes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you want to use fresh, the same rule applies. Yours will be better than mine. I'm going to use a can. But we don't have to drain those because that's perfectly good juice in there. So let's heat the oil. Mm-hmm. Add the onion and the garlic. Stir them around. Cook them for 5 minutes until everything is kind of soft and smells yummy. Yum, yum, yum. Let's stir in a little bit of chili powder and the other spices, the cumin and the coriander, a little bit of salt. Stir fry another minute. Everything smells really nice and it's all going nicely. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to add our chickpeas and our tomato. Mm-hmm. And some of the juice, you'll look at it and see from the tomato can of tomatoes. You might not need all of it, so take a little look. But I usually plop the whole thing in because we're going to cover it and simmer it over a low heat for about 20 minutes, and it's going to be yummy. And what makes this an unusual recipe is the spice. Sometimes people aren't familiar with it, and sometimes people are allergic to the oddest things. I have a friend who's allergic to grape leaves. You know how some things are wrapped in grape leaves? That's an unusual allergy. So, but he's not allergic to grapes. Very strange. So, and also, I must confess that when I do this recipe, I like to add ham and bacon and things like that, which are pork products. And that, of course, is oftentimes something that people don't eat. Yeah. So I kind of like bacon in it. Remember to cook the bacon or the ham beforehand, and you dice them up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and add it in. really towards the last because they're already cooked. They don't need to be simmered that long. You simmer it to reduce the liquid and to get everything all combined, and you serve it with some rice or some sort of a starch to put it over, which I serve next to it. Yeah, so people can choose. So that's our adventure recipe. Uh-oh, we've gone over time. Thank you very much. That means that we had a wonderful conversation. Thank you all very much for having participated. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. You want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Prior shows broadcast are on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.